Mitzvah Shin Samachtes 369. Shelo yochal anozer anovim lachem. That the nozer should not eat fresh grapes. Shelo yochal anozer anovim lachem. Shenemar vanovim lachim lo yochel. Vamru zichron alivracha. Maseches nozer vanovim lachim lo yochel. Lahavias haboser. Meaning, even if the grapes are not fully formed yet, but they're at an immature stage of development, he is not allowed, he or she is not allowed to eat any fresh, moist grapes.
Except that there's rain on them.
Right. As opposed to raisins.
Inner moisture.
Right, as opposed
to... They're not raisins.
Right. As opposed to raisins, not as opposed to...
But they're not allowed to eat raisins either, right?
Right, that's the next mitzvah. Kol inyan mitzvah zo mitzvah kodemisla, it's exactly the same. It's part of the series of the nazir that we're talking about right now. Mishor she'inyan on the zeros, kosavdi lamala, seidalit, insar chachzero. So he's going to... He talked about it already in his original order, but we haven't talked about it yet. But hopefully we'll get to his introduction to the mitzvah of nazir later today. Mitzvah Shinayin 370, Shelo Yochal Anozer Tzimukim. Now we're going to talk about the dried grapes, which are called in English raisins. Shelo Yochal Anozer Tzimukim, that in Rabbinic Hebrew and in modern Hebrew, Tzimukim, we have a separate word for raisins, like we have in English. Grapes are moist grapes, and raisins are dry grapes. In French, you don't have that. In other languages, you don't have that. Raisin means grapes.
Huh.
You get confused. It's one of those things you call false friends. Now, when you have words that sound similar in different languages, but they really mean different things. So, I mean, at least it doesn't mean like, a cantaloupe. It means grapes, but it doesn't really mean dried grapes. Shel yochal anozer tzimukim shenamar vanavim lachim viveishim lo yochel. That he should not eat dried or fresh grapes. So in biblical Hebrew, the word tzimukim did not exist yet, but it was in later Hebrew this word developed. Tzimukim literally means something that shriveled, a shriveled thing. So the word tzimuk doesn't even have to do with grapes in particular. Right, craisins. I mean, tzimukim is now a technical term, but in its original definition, it meant It means
dried apricot.
No, it doesn't mean there's no special word for dried apricots. It's only specific in Rabbinic Hebrew. There's special words for dried grapes and dried figs. Grogros is dried. Tena is a fresh is a fish. Dvila is like a cake when you press the figs together.
Yeah.
That's dvila. I think they're usually made of dried figs, but I think that's mostly what.
What's the word for dried figs?
In modern Hebrew, I mean, it would be a grogeret. Grogeret, grogros, in a regular American Ashkenazi pronunciation. So grogros v'tzimukim. It talks about in the when you dry figs and you dry grapes, and to make from them, in the Mishnah, it says, we'll say grogros v'tzimukim, to make these things. So there are specific words for dried grapes and dried figs, which again did not exist in biblical Hebrew. You would say, just like in other languages, you would say a dried name of the fruit
What does this mean in Tanakh?
So tzimukim doesn't appear in Tanakh. When Sefer Chinuch says this, he's translating the mitzvah into later Hebrew. But in the pasuk it says anavim lachim viveshim, grapes which are fresh or dried that Nazir is not allowed to eat. So, that wouldn't apply in biblical Hebrew, but in later Hebrew, you might say, well, they have a different name now. They're not called grapes anymore, they're called tzimukim, but since they're a separate cheftza, even in biblical Hebrew, even though it didn't have a separate name, it's a new creation now. It's a raisin as opposed to a grape, and therefore maybe the nazir should be allowed to eat it. So the Torah says that he's not allowed to eat either fresh or dry grapes. So it's like the previous mitzvos, and if you eat a kezias of grapes, whether they're fresh or dried, and of course they're mitzdarif with each other, if it's half a kezias of a fresh grape and then half a kezias of raisins, so then it would also be a chi of malkos, you'd receive the penalty of lashes. Mitzvah shinayin aleph, so you see a riot from here also clearly that raisins used to be kosher. You know, there's certain hechsherim nowadays that don't allow raisins, because apparently if you soak raisins and they won't come out. You can't see the bugs.
It's about bugs.
Yeah. So if you, they're the tiny bugs that are embedded in the raisins. So apparently you cannot see them if you just look at the raisin, but if you soak the raisin, so sometimes the bugs will float to the top of the water or something of that nature. So many of the more right-wing heksherim nowadays do not allow the usage of raisins at all. They only allow craisins, right? Cranberries, which don't have any bugs. So the OU, for example, even though they're not so makel in matters of bugs, Rebelsky is quoted as saying that even if you're machmir about which types of bugs are usser, nevertheless, there's something where you can't even find the bugs with a naked eye at all without undergoing a procedure, then he says that that is not a problem. So that's why the centrist Sherem, even again, if they're not so makel in general about bugs, do allow raisins even nowadays. Again, the other, the right, more right wing opinion is that I don't know if they call it right wing opinion, more extreme opinion is that no, you can see the bugs with a naked eye. They're embedded in the raisin. And you just have to do something to get them out. You know, in theory, they're visible to the naked eye.
Can you see them before you soak them?
No, that's Rebelsky's point.
That's what
Rebelsky held that if he was not a makel about bugs either in general, but he said that if, in other words, even if it's sort of embedded, like in, I don't know, broccoli or something like that. So if you look very carefully and you took off the, the florets of the broccoli and you looked very carefully, so you'd be able to. You'd be able to see the bugs. Here, there's no way of finding the bugs at all unless you use this procedure with the soaking in water. So, therefore, he held that the Torah does not require you to do a procedure. If you actually cannot just look at the object and see if there are bugs or not, if it's actually impossible, so the Torah never required us to go through those lengths to do it. Yeah?
Just an aside, would that kind of thinking apply to that business we had a while back about the stuff in the water?
Rebelsky.
You can see it.
Yeah.
But if they're there, you can see it.
Right. So Rebelsky was matter that also for different reasons. But other poskim, no. The raisins are more likely to be mutter than the water. Even though a lot of poskim say that water is okay also, but for different reasons. But again, since you can physically lift up a glass of water and you look inside and you could see the copepods with a naked eye without undergoing any extreme procedures, you know, besides looking at it, then that would be then that potentially could be a problem. But again, there are poskim that say because they blend in with the water also, even though you can see them with a naked eye, and because of the place that they grow, and because of how commonly they're found, so there are poskim that permit the water as well. But more poskim permit the raisins than permit the water. Okay.
And wait, do they cite this? Do they say, see, they ate raisins from Mishneh?
So the more extreme Hechsherim would tell you.
Things have changed.
They say either things have changed or they did this. They did the soaking. At least, you know, with each batch of raisins, they did the soaking. Obviously, that's very, very hard to accept. And especially with the figs. Dried figs, so if the more extreme people about the bugs will tell you not allowed to eat dried figs at all because they're impossible to check. The bugs blend in with the seeds inside. Mm-hmm. So what do you mean? So what he talks about all over the Chazal people eating. Al Korchach, in my opinion, again, there are many, many who disagree with this, but it seems more reasonable to me to say that some of your assumptions are wrong about which bugs are mutar, which bugs are usar, rather than trying to come up with some forced explanation of how they could do it in the times of Chazal, but we can't do it nowadays. But even the OU, I think, is more makbid on the figs than they are on the raisins, because if you really investigate carefully, you could just open it up and potentially find the bugs, even though they sort of blend in. It takes a lot of effort, but maybe you could do it. Interestingly, while we're on this, and the bugs, American Hechsherim are actually a lot more machmer in a certain sense than the Israeli Hechsherim in terms of the bugs, because the OU's policy, for example, is that they will not put the OU, they will not give a Hechsher to something that requires bug checking. That if it has an OU on it, you're allowed to eat it without according to their Shittas. Maybe they will disagree, but according to their Shittas, you're allowed to eat it without checking for bugs. But in you have a very machmer Israeli Hechsherim, which have more stringencies. But that's the Ida Charedis is more, as much, many more stringencies in Kashrus than the OU. But you find figs sold in Israel, and you find stores under the hechsher of the badats that sell figs, because they say, we don't take responsibility for the bug checking. They say, we take responsibility that it's not Orla, and that it's not that all the tithes have been separated, but we don't take responsibility for the bug checking at all. So therefore, it's very odd that some of the more quote-unquote modern hechsherim, you'll never in a million years find an OU on certain types of dried figs. Maybe there are figs with an OU because they hold their cleaner or they hold whatever for whatever their shittas are. But it's just interesting that the Ada does not take responsibility for this at all.
So it's like the wine.
What do you mean about
that? I mean, in Israel, the policy of we're giving you this bottle and you're doing whatever you're doing with it, and we're not worrying about
the mevushel wine
and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of similar.
User beware.
I don't think I've ever seen wine served in Eda Charedes restaurant, so I don't know what their policies would be about wine. I don't know if they allow wine at all.
On the table.
Not the Eda, but other restaurants. There are other Mahadran restaurants with good hechsherim where they serve non-mevushel wine. In America, like a restaurant serving non-mevushel wine, never in a million years. Okay, but
no,
yeah,
there
but
it, one. They put it in right.
Yeah, but in Israel they serve non-mevushel wine. The mashgiach,
no, that's what I mean.
Right? I had that experience too. The mashgiach opens the bottle, puts it in front of the most firm-looking person at the table.
He didn't even open it.
Oh, really?
He didn't even open it. He just put it in front of our.
Did he leave the corkscrew there?
He put it down on the table.
Oh,
really? No. So the restaurant I was at, so the mashgiach opened the bottle, put it directly in front of me, and said, "Okay, your responsibility now." Okay. And as your husband pointed out, so then that could create problems with a kalim potentially. It might be a little far fetched, but and again we'd be matarit b'dyeved. But potentially, if you have a bowl of hot soup, for example, they're serving you a bowl of hot soup, and then you have a non-Jew, obviously certainly a non-Jew, even a non-firm Jew, according to many shittas. So then you've served even if the most rum person at the table has poured everyone the wine. So now they have this glass of wine, and you have this bowl of boiling hot soup. Whoops! And you accidentally spill the wine into the bowl of soup. So
are the non-firm person.
Right. Well, that could create kashrus problems with the kalim of the restaurant.
Well,
again, the arch cool is, but yeah, okay, fine. But in America, our policy is much better that we don't allow non-mevushel wine at restaurants at all.
Yeah, but we accept as mevushel some things that they don't, so...
So you're saying, well, they don't hold that it's mevushel anyway, but so you might as well... It doesn't matter, so if you're makel to serve the wine in the restaurant anyway...
What would the issues make about mevushel or not mevushel?
So a lot of the Israeli post-Gim hold, or big names, or Shlomo Zalman, Orbach, Rav Yoshev held... that pasteurizing wine does not make it mevushel.
Oh,
because it's held that mevushel wine, the pshat is that it's not subject to the gzeira that a non-Jew is not allowed to handle wine because it's different. It's visibly, perceptibly different. So they hold that in order to be considered mevushel, you basically have to have an open vat of wine and boil it to the extent that at least one bubble, or some steam would emit for the wine. Makes it much worse. Although it's a whole discussion that we've shown about the whether cooking makes wine better or worse, but most people nowadays would assume
wine.
Right. So that's why, according to a lot of Israeli poskim, then the wines that we consider mevushel, based on Rav Moshe Feinstein's psak in America, the minhag is generally to accept pasteurized wines that have been heated very quickly and cooled down very quickly in a closed system so they don't evaporate. It doesn't affect the quality of the wine much, although really discerning individuals can sometimes tell the difference.
Absolutely, there is a difference. No question.
Well, it depends on the wine. So sometimes if you're drinking a cheap mevushel wine and you compare it to an expensive non-mevushel wine, so of course the non-mevushel is better. It's much more expensive. Okay. But anyway, so these... a lot of poskim in a lot of people in Israel... I mean, I'm sure there are some individuals in America who are machmer on this, but much more common in Israel to be machmer that what we call mevushel wine is not called mevushel wine at all. And there's no heter to drink it if it's handled by non-Jew.
It says it on the label, right? It says mevushel according to, but I forget which way it goes.
All right, so I think a lot of them stopped doing this, and I'm trying to investigate why, but in the olden days when there was a wine with a very heavy-duty hechsher, so if it was just pasteurized, it wouldn't write on the label mevushel. It would write mevushel al yedei pistur, pasteurized. Meaning, so you choose. We're telling you what happened to this wine, and you choose which sheet to follow. And yeah, but a lot of them, even the Eidach Haredes wines, I've seen nowadays, they just start writing Boshal. I'm not sure exactly why. I have to ask the OU wine person in Israel what exactly happened with that. And you have a problem also, a problem which I recently discovered. Again, those who completely follow Moshe Feinstein's psak that pasteurized wine is considered mevushal, so then it's not a problem. But in a lot of Hechsherim, American Hechsherim especially, have a shtick with a wine that saves them a lot of Jewish workers, which is that at a very early stage of the wine processing, like when the grapes are basically still in the vat being starting to be pressed, they pasteurize the grapes at the very, very early stage, very beginning of the wine processing. So then that saves you, and now instead of doing a wine run, you need 15 mashgichim, you need 15 from Jewish people to run it. Now you just have, you know, 2 mashgichim, and the rest of the workers for the rest of the wine process are goyim. It's much easier. So I had no idea about this until several months ago, but I've absolutely had it confirmed. I spoke to the OU. So it's a big problem. So if again, not lemaisa for those who follow Rav Moshe, but you know, if I want to serve, I would like to know about this, because if you have a wine that says OU Mevushal, for example, or other Hesherim, I'm sure, or regular American Hesherim are making on this. So if you have a wine that just says OU Mevushal on it, so you don't know, it's very possible that they pasteurize the grapes at a very early stage of the processing, and the rest of the time was handled by goyim. So if that's the case, then according to Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yosha, this wine is not kosher. So if you have people who want to be makbid on that, then you should be aware that you need either, if you're buying wine with that is under a hashgacha that is lenient about this. So A, you have two choices. One, you could buy wine that is not mevushal. So even if the only extra on a wine is the OU, which is lenient about this, but if it says non-mevushal, so obviously, if they're giving an extra on it, so no goyim handled it until after the bottling. So that would be okay, even for those who want to be makbid on Rav Shlomo Zalman or Rav Yosha. But your other choice is you have to buy wines with not just an OU, but with another Hechsher that is known to be Choshesh, to be concerned for the opinion of Rav Yoshev and Rav Shlomo Zalman, and therefore they would not have allowed Goyim to handle the wine at any stage until bottling, even if the wine is labeled as Mevushal. So again, I'm not... again, in America, where most people are lenient about this, but it's a good thing to know, so that in case you encounter someone who is Makbid on the opinion of Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Yoshev, so then don't serve them wine that just is labeled OU and Mevushal. But most of the, I don't know, I have to figure out which ones are and which ones are not, but certainly in Israel, I assume that most, if not all, wines with a Mahadran Hechsher are not handled by Goyim at any stage before the bottling, even if it's labeled Mevushal. And most European wines, which are not just OU, usually they have a local Haredi rabbi also, or to giving the Hechsher as well, or not so local. But so then I would assume that most of those, even if they're labeled Mevushal, are not handled by Goyim at any point before the bottling. Again, I'm not saying what one has to do or what one shouldn't do, but just something that it is good for the kosher consumer to be aware of. Mitzvah Shinayin Aleph 371. Shal Yochal Hanozer Zera Hanovim. That you shouldn't eat grape seed. Shal Yochal Hanozer Zera Hanovim. Shemar Mecharzanim Vadzaglo Yochel Kolyan Mitzvah Sakodmo Simachomen Kezayis Loke. Even if you gather the grape seed separately, not just adding a nice crunch to the grapes, but rather that you gather them separately and eat them, you shouldn't cook with grape seed oil, etc. Okay, Mitzvah Shinayin Beis. Shelo yochal hanazir klipas hanovim. You shouldn't eat the skin of the grapes either. Shelo yochal hanazir klipas hanovim shenamar ve'ad zag lo yochel. That there is zag hua klipa. So that's the biblical Hebrew term for the skin of the grape. Kol inyan mitzvah zakodmos is the same as the previous mitzvahs in terms of its ideas. V'nisrabu hazaros barchokas hayayin v'v'chol hayotzim min agef. And lefi adomim nishu yesh b'chol hayotzim en hakoach rav la'agdil hayetzer. That the grape is a... is temptation incarnate. That the grape is connected to wine. So you see that the grape is one of the strongest substances that God created in the world that led on the Yetzer Hara. This is what the scientists nowadays say. Okay.
What about whiskey? put on tomorrow.
Yeah, okay, but you see,
what the
difference is as follows. That whiskey is made of grain, and grain is fundamentally created, hamotzi lechem in haaretz. The highest manifestation of grain is to be bread. It's to be sustenance, food sustenance to people. And the secondary thing that people do with grain is making whiskey. Not so the grapes. The fundamental reason that God created grapes was to provide wine. Okay, people eat grapes also sometimes. People eat grapes sometimes also. But the fundamental manifestation of the grape is in terms of the wine, and that's why there are separate brachos. When a food has attained its highest level of service to the human race, it gets a separate bracha. So when grain, if you have wheat kernels, and you chew on the wheat kernels, what's the bracha? Hadama. Yeah, the bracha is hadama. If you grind up those very same kernels into flour and you make bread, what's the bracha? Motzi lechem min haaretz. So this is the highest level. And motzi lechem, the bracha of motzi lechem min haaretz, has the potential not only to exempt the bread from a bracha, but you make hamotzi on bread, so all the foods that are eaten together with the bread, the machlokas rishonim, whether it's only the foods that are eaten directly with the bread, the sheet of Rashi, but we pass in like Tosfos, who holds that it's not only the foods that are eaten directly with the bread, but any foods that are eaten as a main part of the meal are exempt with a bracha of hamotzi. So there's a very strong bracha. So the same thing too. When you eat a grape, what's the bracha? Haitz. When you make it into wine,
Bar Priha Gofen.
And the same thing. When you make a gofen on wine, then it exempts all the other beverages that you're drinking for the course of the, even if you're not having a bread meal, but in the course of the repast that you're having. So that's the reason that grain is not considered to be intrinsically tied to tempting the Yetzer Hara, whereas grapes are. Well, of course, you have a kasha on what I just said. Not that part, but on the brachos, that in the highest manifestation of certain major foods, so they get a separate bracha. So nu, what about olive oil? What about olive oil? Why doesn't olive oil have its own bracha?
Yeah, because olive oil is not eaten by itself.
Oh, excellent. That's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara says that olive oil doesn't have its own bracha. And in fact, according to the Machlokes Rishonim, whether the bracha is shahakol or whether there's no bracha, because it's not normal to eat olive oil by itself.
Except for those who want to improve their memory. I know somebody.
Yeah, well then you come into Machlokes Rishonim, whether maybe you should make a shahakol. But
I wonder what bracha.
But
it's like eating salad dressing.
Hello. It's worse.
If you're taking it for medicinal purposes, could
right. So yeah. No, if you're taking it purely for medicinal purposes, you don't enjoy it at all, so then there's certainly no bracha. But if you're eating it because you want to eat it, then there's a still according to some, then you make no bracha because it's intrinsically inedible. Like one exception that the Gemara presents is that if you have a sore throat and you really want to eat olive oil, it's not purely for medicinal purposes. It's you make it into a nice dish. And you would take a huge amount of olive oil and you mix a little vegetable soup to make it palatable. Make a very, very oily vegetable soup. You don't really care about the vegetable soup. Mainly you want to be eating the oil. So Gemara says, in that circumstance, then you'd make a bori priha eats. Because that's a situation where eating olive oil is the normal, considered to be a normal way of eating. But it still doesn't have its own bracha. Mm-hmm. There's no, okay. I don't know what it would be. No, it's machlokes. So some people say that if you legitimately want to eat a spoonful of olive oil, so you should make a shahakol on something else and ha'itz on some. I'm sorry, make a shahakol on something else and exempt the olive oil. So then you get. But most people don't eat plain olive oil. My parents always used to tell me that in Greece people drink cups of olive oil as a beverage sometimes.
Really? Well, I think that's true.
Yeah, they like olive oil. Okay, so maybe they should certainly make a shahakol. All right. V'chosav haRambam zechor l'vracha v'zog deRambam v'harayal hayos eila chamesh kelomar yain v'anovim atzimukim v'acharzan v'azag. So these five parts and manifestations of grapes kol echad v'echad mitzvah b'fnei atzma. So each is considered to be a separate mitzvah. As we counted them, there's shin samach tes and shin ayin, all the different mitzvahs. So in Mitzchayim Adam Malkus Achas al kol echad beechad. So you get malchus on each one separately. Kemosha amr zichron the bracha of the Mishnah. The chayv al yayim b'fnei atzma, v'al anovin b'fnei atzma, v'al chartzon b'fnei atzma, v'al zayim b'fnei atzma. You get a kezayis of grape seeds, and a kezayis of raisins, and a kezayis of fresh grapes, and you drink a revius of wine. So you get a separate malchus for each one. V'amr kemokim v'masechas nazir. Achal anovim lachim v'eshim chartzonim v'zayim v'sochad eshkol shel anovim v'shasa loke chamesh. So you get five malchus. One for fresh grapes, one for raisins, one for the seeds, and one for the peels. And then you, not only that, you take not wine, grape juice. You take a cluster of grapes, you squeeze them, and you drink the juice right away. So halachically, that's wine. So even though it's basically, there was fresh grapes 1 second ago, nevertheless, you get a separate malchus because now it's wine and it used to be grapes. And each of these separate manifestations of grapes are considered to be a separate mitzvah. That even if you ate another manifestation of the grape, you'd have more than five malchios. So there's a separate mitzvah that in the Torah that means for any vow that you make, lo yachel dvaro, you shall not nullify your words. So you get separate malchios for that as well. This list of the five malchios for the five manifestations grapes left something else out, not the lo yachel, but left out vinegar. Vinegar is a separate, maybe is a separate one. V'tam l'fi shelo yischayev al yayin v'al chometz shtayim, k'mo shamarnu v'nei shachometz nesar machmatz ikar u shu yayin. So it says, no, the only thing that's not considered a separate mitzvah is the vinegar. You might think the Torah lists vinegar separately. Chometz yayim v'chometz shechar chartzanim v'ad zagle. It lists all these things separately. So you might think that vinegar is one and wine is one. No, the only exception is that the vinegar and wine is together, because the Gemara says that the one that they left out from that list was not vinegar, but rather lo yachel, the general prohibition to nullify the fulfillment of any vow. V'inyan ha-kosuv kilo amar sh'ikar yisur shel yayin lo sar mimenu b'efseido. That the meaning is that in this particular instance, so vinegar is considered less desirable than wine. So in this instance, it's not a separate manifestation of the grape, but rather it's considered that it's a chiddush that the Torah is telling you that even though it's decreased in quality, nevertheless, it's concluded in the prohibition of wine. So they're separate things, but let's say even if you don't manage to have a kezias of grape seeds and a kezias of grape skins, but you combine them together and you have a kezias, so with both of them together, so you will at least get one set of malchias, not completely separate to the extent that they don't even join in with each other to form the requisite shear of a kezias. Okay, so now we're done with the nazir's prohibitions regarding grapes. Now we're going to go to the totally different aspects of the nazir. So first we're going to talk about the prohibition for the nazir to cut his or her hair. And then we're going to talk about the prohibition, not today, but we're going to talk about the prohibition to become tamei by contact with a dead body, which is similar to a kohen. Mitzvah Shinayin Gimel. 373, Shelo Yigaleach HaNazir Saro Kol Yemei Nizro, that the Nazir should not cut his hair the entire length of the days that he's a Nazir. Shelo Yigaleach HaNazir Saro Kol Yemei Nizro, so Shneamar Tar Lo Yavor Al Rosho. A razor should not pass over his head. Mishor Shia Mitzvah Kasafti L'mala Asei Dalet. Okay, that's going to be in our, it's actually the next mitzvah in our current order. Midine haMitzvah Mashamar Zichron Levracha SheEchad HaMegaleach BeTar O BeMisparayim KeEin Tar. That it says in the Chumash VeTar Lo Yavor Al Rosho. A razor should not pass over his head. So you might think that means no, a razor. That's Midavka razor, but scissors is fine. Scissors is okay. It says no. Regarding a Nazir, scissors that act in the manner of a razor are also prohibited. Or even if you pull out the hair with tweezers or with your hand, whatever, it's all forbidden. This is
you can't hardly comb your hair.
We'll get to combing. Talks about combing in a second. But this is different from the rules governing
shaving.
Don't try this.
What?
At some point, I would like to go back and get to the question of why people take this on. Why somebody?
Oh, that's in the next mitzvah.
Okay. Fine.
Yeah. So that's in contrast to what the Torah says regarding a man shaving his beard, where it says in one place, lo sashchis. I'm sorry. No, it says lo sashchis es pe'asik anecha. It says you should not destroy the corners of your beard as opposed to just cutting. So therefore, regarding the man shaving his beard, so it only is problematic if the hair is completely destroyed. Meaning that you have to take a razor and you have to shave it down all the way to the root. To the root. So if a man took a razor and had a very long beard and just went, chopped it in half, that's 100% permissible. Or if you take scissors and you go like this, close to the skin, and you cut the beard, so that is permissible. And or if you shave with a depilatory cream, then that is also permissible. But for a nazir, all these things would be forbidden.
So scissors are forbidden altogether because it imitates... razor.
Oh, so the length we'll talk about in 1 second.
Depilatory cream is also, according to this, prohibited to a nazir?
Yeah.
Really? Because it pulls out.
Even if you pull it out. So, yeah, if a man wants to shave his beard by taking tweezers and pulling out each hair one by one, that's also permissible.
But the depilatory cream doesn't go down to the root, does it?
Yeah. It eats away at the hair all the way, all the hair that it can get at.
So not totally, because eventually it grows back.
Yeah. Well, of course it grows back, but I'm saying all the hair that currently exists, it destroys. I mean, the powder is supposed to destroy organic matter. That's why they say you shouldn't leave it on... I never used it, but they say you should say, don't leave it on your face too long. It'll start eating away at your face, not just the hair on your face.
Yeah. My grandfather, that's what he used to use.
Yeah, before razors, before electric razors, he could adjust whatever people use this, you know, powder to take the beard off, job stuff, and there was people wondering.
Yeah. My grandfather did that, I know.
Yeah, so that's why. Yeah, a lot of yeshiva students used to do that in the olden days. Look at pictures of yeshiva students from the late 19th century.
Yeah.
So they don't have beards, so it's bad. You know, they didn't have good electric razors yet. Most of them used to use the powder, the depilatory powder, to shave, because they viewed it as a religious virtue to appear refined in the eyes of the general populace. In the olden days, it was only the older men and rabbanim who had beards. At least in Lithuanian yeshivas, obviously in Chassidish yeshivas, that certainly not. By Chassidim, they're very makbid that you shouldn't shave at all, based on the Arizal, who apparently, according to one interpretation, at least held that the beard represents the midas harachamim, that represents mercy, and the hair on the head represents midas hadin, strict divine judgment. So therefore, that's why Chassidim completely trim down the hair on their heads, besides the peis and the beard, which they don't touch at all, because those are represent midas harachamim, mercy, and we want to encourage God's mercy as opposed to encouraging God's attributes of strict judgment. According to halacha, it's interesting though that this only Chassidim adopted this. There are, in terms of Sfardim, who are equally great Kabbalists. You know, the Sephardic community, certain elements of the Sephardic community places just as great emphasis on Kabbalah as the Chassidim. Apparently, they didn't have this tradition from the Arizal that you shouldn't shave, trim your beards at all. You see great Sephardi Mikubalim who did trim their beards and they trimmed their payas. Now, they cut it off, obviously, all the way, but yeah. So, fine. So, what's the story about the nazir? Kol zman shekitzatza, any way that you took out the hair from the root, loke, you receive the penalty of lashes. Aval kol zman sheniach menu kedei lochuf rosho leikaro, eino loke, shein zeke ein tar. But even if you're not allowed to do it, you don't receive the penalty of lashes if you trim your hair down to the extent that you leave enough that you could bend the hair in half. If you leave enough that you could bend the hair in half, then it's okay. And that's why, even though it doesn't appear anywhere, in Chazal, for example, something that's more relevant to our lives, or at least the lives of four of us, regarding trimming the payas. So where it doesn't say in the Gemara anywhere explicitly how long your payas have to be. So that's why people derive from this that the payas have to be long enough, and it would, as opposed to the beard, which has a different set of rules, which we'll discuss in a minute. But the payas, according to the shitas that we go like, you're not allowed to take scissors and trim down your payas all the way, the same way you are with the beard, that it says that you're allowed to take, because it doesn't say lo sashchis by the payas. It doesn't say you shouldn't destroy, it just says you shouldn't take them off. Lo sakifu, you shouldn't cut them down. So how far is cutting down the payas? So a lot of poskim say that the shear is the same here as by nazir, that the payas have to be long enough to be able to bend in half. I think some are a little more makel than that, even that they if you still could take a scissors and trim it off more, then it would be okay. But we normally follow the opinion that this payas have to be long enough that they have to be foldable. You have to be able to fold all the hairs over; otherwise, it's too short. According to halacha, it doesn't have to be any longer than that. But you have chassidim again have this kabbalistic idea, and then you have also other groups of Jews, even non-chassidim, who grow long payas. You know, Yemenites certainly. Right, certainly Yemenites. But even I was thinking of in Ashkenazim, you have more right-wing Lithuanian yeshiva students nowadays who have like payas behind the ears. The reason for that is they feel that, not because halachically required, not at all. According to no opinion is having long payas halachically required, but they feel that having a longer payas demonstrates a greater commitment to a distinctively Jewish hairstyle. Now, the Rambam says that Jews should have distinctive dress and have a distinctive hairstyle, so it doesn't mean they have to be totally different from anyone else, they're a little distinctive. So if you grow your payas long, well, how much more distinctive? That's a quintessential Jewish thing. You don't cut this area. So by leaving it longer, you make yourself more. You give yourself a distinctive Jewish hairstyle. So they consider it some sort of kiyum mitzvah. But like I said, according there's no shita that holds that in halacha that it's required to have your payas any longer than any other part of your hair, as long as it's foldable. Yeah.
How about single women until they start covering their hair when they get married? Are they supposed to have distinctive haircuts also? Women.
Yeah, why not?
They should
be more modest. They should have, even though single women are allowed to uncover their hair, so they should have wear their hair in a more modest manner than non-Jewish girls.
Whatever that is.
Well, according to some opinions, we were discussing this a few weeks ago, according to some opinions, it means braided. It means Jewish girls should have braided hair. They shouldn't have, but even though we don't go like that, I mean, they should still, not have. I don't know all the different styles, but something very eye-catching.
Mohawk or something.
No frosted, okay.
Again, it's not distinctively Jewish. Even refined non-Jewish women don't have mohawks, but again, okay.
So you just answered my question: why Yemenites call it simanim?
Yeah. Oh, that's why, because it's distinctively Jewish. Yes.
Because they follow Rambam very much, and he.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, but the Rambam doesn't hold that the payas have to be that long. Which means that they held that it's a siman, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. 100%. But by the beard, there's no rule that it has to be a certain length. It's just as long as you didn't do giluach and hashchasa, then it's okay. You need two things. You need it has to be cutting with a cutting implement, which is a razor, or scissors are giluach. Scissors are considered to be cutting, but they don't have hashchasa. They don't completely destroy the hair all the way down to the root. Yeah?
The thing is that guys have different rates of beard growth. Some guy can grow beard down to here, and some guy can grow beard to here. I mean, it's not
so.
Like...
But it doesn't matter. But
you can't legislate
same.
How long it can be because some people.
No, you don't legislate how long it. The question is how short it can
be.
So the Gemara says that Misparayim Ke'ein Tar is okay. That if you take your scissors and you put it right next to your skin and you cut, then that's okay. Because even though that's Giluach, that's cutting, but it's not Hashchasa. It's not completely destroying the hair down to the root. So then the question arises. What about electric shavers? What about electric recent, shavers? Recent. Nowadays, yeah, it's a new shiloh. So the Chofetz Chaim writes in Likutei Halachos, he has in sections of the Gemara that were not covered by the Rif when he had digested the discussion of the Gemara into the practical halacha, so the Chofetz Chaim filled it in with something called Likutei Halachos. So in his Likutei Halachos, he writes that Mashinke, the machine to shave with, little machine to shave with, is usur, because even though it doesn't work exactly like a razor, it works with blades, and it cuts the hair all the way down to the root. So therefore, giluach and hashchasa. It's even though the Gemara says misparayim kein tar is okay, that if you put a scissors next to your face and you go like that, then it's okay. It means that there's a little bit of hair left. You can't. It means they can't go all the way down to the skin level. It says if you cut the hair, according to the Chofetz Chaim, if you cut the hair all the way down to the skin level, then it's usur, even if you use scissors, because it's giluach and hashchasa. So people point out, well, if the Chofetz Chaim asserted even the machines that were first came out in the 1860s, so nowadays they're even better. So certainly it's usur nowadays. So that's why the
Chofetz... they're adjustable now, aren't they?
Some are, yeah. So if you, but not the rotary ones. Those are designed to give you a close shave. That's why a lot of poskim say it doesn't matter that it's not a straight razor if it cuts the hair. And if it cuts the hair with some type of blade and it goes all the way down to the root, it's usur. So you're not allowed to use an electric shaver. But some poskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein and Tzvi Pesach Frank, said no, electric shavers are okay, because when the Gemara says giluach sheish bo hashchasa, it doesn't mean that you could combine the giluach of the scissors and it's all the way down to the root. It means no. The Gemara doesn't mean that if it has anything that you could imagine to have both giluach and hashchasa as a problem, it means a razor. It means something that's cut with the when you take a blade and you rub it against your skin. But if it cuts the electric shaver, a rotary electric shaver, works by there's a blade that's spinning around, and then there's a screen. So the hair goes into the screen, and then it's supposed to cut against the screen. Mm-hmm. The blade going, what? So, I mean, it sort of does, because once you finish, so then you can't really tell. You can't tell if somebody shaved with a razor or shaved with an electric shaver. But these poskim hold that what the Gemara really means is it's not saying that anything that results in a very close shave that was created by a blade is usur, but it just means a straight razor is usur. But if there's a scissor mechanism therein, then it's okay.
Yeah, it's even like if you go to barber, right? First, he would put this machine that cuts the hair. He would put what's called screen on it. Put 1, 2, 3, and then whatever the size is. And when you cut the beard, so the blade does not go against the skin. It just goes. There is like a
So if there's a recognizable length of hair that protrudes from the skin.
Yeah.
So then that's mutter even with a straight razor.
Yeah.
That would be allowed. So again, the electric shaver is a very controversial topic in halacha. That again, the most people in non-chassidim, non-chassidim in general, are generally lenient about that at some point or another in the course of their lives. But it's a big shaila. So that's why I once asked Rabbi Willig. We're talking about different types of shavers. So some say that a regular electric shaver is okay, but if it has a lift and cut mechanism. It claims, some say it doesn't even work, but it claims that the part of the mechanism of the shaver is that it pulls the hair out of the root, so and then it chops it off, and then by the time it puts your skin back onto the normal place, you basically cut under the skin level. Yeah, so some say that that's usur, but the other shavers are mutter. So Rabbi Willig says he doesn't agree with this. He says either they're all usur or they're all mutter. There's no in between. But even he didn't say for sure. It's no shaila whatsoever. It really is a big question. That's why. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, I told you that one of the big matirim was Rav Moshe Feinstein. So you won't find the tshuva about this anywhere in the Gros Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuva sefer. So he says, "Nu, but this is important. This is very important for people who need to rely on this for business, and they can't have beards, and they." So why aren't you writing it down in your sefer? So he says, Yeah, I hold it's mutter. Everybody knows orally he said it. Nobody disagrees with that at all. But he says, I can't say officially, I can't publish in a sefer that it's okay for a Jewish man to shave. Jewish men should have beards. It's not, even if it's like, according to halacha, strictly speaking, it's mutter. A Jewish man should have a beard. So that's why other poskim say. That's Rav Vadia also writes, says a very lengthy tshuva about electric shavers. And he said that, you know, when his sons were in yeshiva, he matted them to use shavers. But he said as soon as they reached the age where it was considered appropriate, he said he should stop shaving as soon as possible. That is a general, again, some people need it. But most poskim assume that the main way a Jewish man is supposed to appear is with a beard.
It used to be much worse before. Now it's much more, much easier to have a beard. Before, in the business world, was...
Right, especially nowadays. We have to... it's much better for Jews in a lot of ways. Yeah,
guys,
that's a good point.
Guys, sits down on their knees nowadays. My husband never did that.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered in my workplace, there was an old document when they started the minyan, the job. It was 2001.
Yeah.
So you could see the progression in the workplace that... The 2001, they started to have a minyan at work. It was officially sanctioned by the company.
That's not such a long time ago.
So it's like progression in that regard has been like it's easy now to have a beard or to have minyan at work, and it's like much easier the whole thing.
The grandma having beards now, it's a style.
Right, that's also true.
Yeah,
that's also true. I mean, even if you look at pictures of YU or even other non-Chassidish yeshivas, if you look at the smicha class from the 50s and 60s and 70s, nobody has beards. Nowadays, I don't know, the vast majority, but certainly the majority of, at least after getting married, so the vast majority of smicha students at YU grow beards. Just it's that. Now it's the zach now. It's a style that good should be the style that pretty much even if you're makel before you get married, but people tend to grow beards immediately after they get married. Interesting. Okay, so Hevir al Rosho Sam Shemesher Asaser Vahesher Asaro Einoloka. So if you don't use a cutting instrument, then you don't receive the penalty of lashes. Aval bitel asay shel gadel pera se'ar rosho kemo shemayinu l'mal v'nozer shegilach kol rosho eino loka amishum tiglachas elachas. So to combine a couple ideas in that sentence, I have it here in brackets. Whatever. Okay. So even if you use a cream, a depilatory cream to knock out all your hair, you do not receive the penalty of lashes, but you neglected to perform the positive commandment, which is the next mitzvah, which I don't think we're going to get to today. But the next mitzvah is that the nazir should let his hair grow. So he didn't let his hair grow, but he didn't use a cutting instrument either. So that he neglected to perform the positive commandment of letting his hair grow, but on the other hand, he didn't violate the negative commandment, which is that he's not allowed to cut his hair.
So in other words, that his nazirus continues, right? I mean, if he cuts the hair...
Ooh, we'll get there. Good question. Excellent question.
I'm sorry. I should have told you before. I had
the meeting. Okay, no, sorry. It's okay. Sure.
I should have mentioned it before. Thank you very much.
Sure. Okay, and if you cut all your whole hair at once, so you only receive one penalty of lashes, v'im hisru bo'al kol se'ar v'se'ar amru al-tigaleach v'umagaleach lokal kol achas v'achas. But if you're cutting your hair one by one, and the people say, the witnesses say, you're not allowed to do that, Nazir, you're not allowed to do that. And you go, ha, 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 ha. So on each hair that you cut, you receive the penalty of lashes. You get hundreds of thousands of lashes, you know, by the time you're done. Okay? V'chein me'inyen ha-mitzvah ma'she'amru b'masecha Shabbos. Nazir chofeif u'mefaspeis abal lo sorik. That a Nazir is allowed to rub his hair with his hands. and scratch it with the nails, but you're not allowed to comb. Kilomar shechomer shechofev saro biyada vechochech betziporna v'im naflu saros mitoch achvifa pisu avapispus eno choshesh achar shein kavanoso laashiro. So, if a hair falls out, so it's not a problem because what? It's called It's called a davar she'eino miskaven.
Right.
We have a principle in halacha, which we normally find nowadays by Hilchos Shabbos, which is that if there's something that's not necessarily going to happen and you don't have any interest in it happening, so then it's allowed.
It's like there is no ratzon really in this particular case.
Right, so it applies by the Nazir also. So here, if you go like this, so hair isn't necessarily going to fall out, and you don't want it to fall out, so it's okay.
Yeah.
Even though it could potentially result in something that you're not allowed to do, which is hair falling out. Be'efshar gam kein shelo yeh nishar mipnei zeh, aval lo soreg b'masreg, you're not allowed to comb with a comb, lefisha masreg ma'pilu mashir aser b'li sofik. So when you comb your hair, it's certainly going to pull some hair out, so therefore you're not allowed to comb your hair, because that's what's called an halacha psik reshe. That if you do something that necessarily results in another action, so then it's usually not allowed, even if your main intent is not for that action. V'chein lo yachuf ba'adama mibnei she'mashras ha'seir vadai. And you shouldn't rub your hair with earth, or like wash it with a shampoo that for sure takes hair out, because then that's all would be considered to be a psik reshe, something that necessarily results.
This is the
Rabbanan
or the
Raisa? This is the Raisa, yeah. Psik reshe denichale is the Raisa, we normally assume. Psik reshe denichale, that if there's a psik reshe that you want to happen, so here, when you comb your hair, you want it to pull out the knotted hairs. So that is, that's be the Raisa, yeah.
Well, if you keep your hair unknotted, then it will not result.
Then it wouldn't happen at all. Then you don't have to worry.
Like,
yeah, if you
brush and
different types of combs, different types of combs, different types of brushes, you have to assess what's actually going to happen or not. Avalimasa kein eino loke. B'yaser prateh maseches nazir. So the rest of these are maseches nazir, so I think we'll finish next time. I have to discuss more about the psikresha business, so we'll...
And we don't need a week from today.
All right, correct. It won't be in next week. It'll be in 2 weeks. Mitzvah Shem.